Greetings, Slidell. This is Bob Riles, your host to the new Grace Radio series, Voices. This new adventure in programming for Grace Radio focuses on the voices of our neighbors here in Slidell. Our guest today on Voices is a long-term resident of Slidell, a man about town in many circles, Mike Rich, a certified financial planner, serving many people here in our community for a long time with Pontchartrain Investments, 2242 Carey Street in Old Town Slidell. Mike, glad you could be here today.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Bob. Thank you for having me.
You've been on the show before, and I think people have responded well to your words of wisdom. And today, I think it might be helpful for us to talk about the economy a little bit. We see all kind of numbers thrown at us. The stock market's higher than it has been. Employment seems to be good in some people's books, but yet the presidential candidates are dissing some of the numbers and saying it's not as good as it seems. So that leaves folks like me kind of totally confused. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it indifferent? Are there any thoughts on what we ought to be doing to help or protect ourselves? Maybe you could help us with that this morning, Mike.
Sure. Well, that's a good place to start. Bob, from what I've been reading, and I read a lot every day, our economy is doing okay. As you mentioned, unemployment is down. In fact, I think we're almost to what our leaders would consider to be full employment, which is an unemployment rate of around 4 to 5% across the country. So people are working, they have money to spend. But on the other hand, real wages, that is wages that are adjusted for inflation, have been relatively flat, and they've been flat for a very long time. And by some measures, it's been almost decades where the average wage of the average American worker is really not much different than it was back in the 70s and 80s in terms of buying power. So that's rather troubling. I also read an article just last week. A lot of parents are starting to think their fear is that their children will not enjoy the same standard of living that they, the parents, have today. And that's really the first time we've ever seen that type of sentiment from people, where they're concerned that their children are not going to do better than they themselves did. As Americans, you know, we have this, it's almost this birthright that every succeeding generation is going to do better than the one before.
Okay.
Well, that might not be the case anymore, and that's troubling, especially when you look at real wages and how they really haven't improved for the average American worker over a very long period of time. On the other hand, as you mentioned, the stock market is at an all-time high. Been at this level up and down a little bit since November of 2014. So we've been kind of flat, but the market is at an all-time high. It's been there for a long time. The bond market, everybody said bonds were going to crater last year and this year because of the specter of rising interest rates. Well, that hasn't happened. Even with the Federal Reserve talking about potentially increasing interest rates toward the end of this year, the bond market really hasn't responded to that. And bonds are doing very well. So we've got a good stock market, we've got a good bond market, but the stock market is not the economy, and vice versa. And so there are lots of things going on that affect all of us. Problem is that we are not in control of many of the things that affect us. And when I talk with clients and with potential clients, what I really want them to do is focus on the things that they can control rather than the things that they can't control.
Okay, that's good advice. I'm a little bit concerned, and maybe you can help me understand better. If our buying power is the same as it was 40 years ago, has inflation increased such that we're able to do less now than we were able to do 40 years ago in the 70s and 80s? What's the reality of that?
Well, the reality, Bob, is that the rate of inflation over the past 20 or 30 years has been, depending on how you measure it, somewhere between 2 and 3% per year. When you're looking at a period of time of 20 or 30 years, a couple of percent every year is a big number.
Sure it is.
And so when you look at the cost of goods at a grocery store or what we pay for a new car compared to what we did 20 and 30 years ago, it's a significant difference. And inflation has always been with us. It will always be with us. In fact, one of the mandates or the marching orders of the Federal Reserve is to maintain a certain level of inflation. Their target is usually about 2% a year, and we've been staying at that rate. Inflation is a big deal. And when I work with clients and when we do projections for their income planning for the future, especially looking 10, 15, 20, or 30 years down the road, typically for somebody somebody who's getting ready to retire and we're trying to figure out how to make their money last, if we don't factor inflation in, we're really deceiving ourselves. And so what I usually use a rate of inflation of between 2 and 3% to do planning and to make sure that we're being realistic in what we can expect their dollar to buy 10, 20, or 30 years from now, because it is not going to buy the same amount of goods and services in 30 years that it's buying today.
With that same thought in mind, with young people not having the quality of life, we'll say, that their parents have, you know, I think there's a statistic I saw recently that the more young people who are continuing to live at home, they're not moving out. They're staying under mom and dad's care, even though they've got jobs, they've got their own health insurance, they've got their own life that they live, but they're living under mom and dad's roof. Do you think that this social change has in some way been inspired by this inflation type thing?
Bob, I think some of that has been driven by financial crisis that started in 2007 and 2008, where our economy really suffered. And young people coming out of college, a lot of them had a very difficult time finding a job. I think that's changing. Something that I read just recently is that large employers across the country are having a very difficult time finding enough qualified college graduates to fill their positions. Now, part of what's driving this, too, is, and I saw this in my own experience as a young person. In order to get the kind of job I wanted, I started out as a petroleum geologist when I came out of graduate school. I had to move. My wife and I moved from Iowa to New Orleans. Talk about culture shock.
Yay for us.
And we've been here ever since. But we packed up everything we had and we moved essentially 1,000 miles away from our home to start a new life. I don't see a lot of young people doing that these days. And, you know, and maybe it's going to take something like that to get them to make the decision to pull up stakes and go where the jobs are. Because everything that I read says the jobs are out there. Employers are having a hard time finding people. You just need to go to where the work is. Now, I think some of that, as we move forward, is going to change as well. I've seen a big upsurge in telecommuting, people working from wherever they want to be able to interact with people who are across the country, sometimes across the world. I've got a client today who lives in Picayune, and he is the only employee of the company he works for down here in this area. And the rest of his counterparts are scattered across the country, and they work together on a daily basis through video conferencing and texting and messaging and do very complex work from the comfort of their own homes. I think we're going to see more and more of that. But going back to the kids living with their parents, I think eventually they're going to move out. But by having that type of relationship, they have a great gift. Their expenses are low. And if you're a young person and you're 25 or 30 years old, the great gift you have is time. I got a new client a couple of weeks ago. He's the son of one of my longtime clients, and he's just starting out. He's 25 years old. And his dad told him to make an appointment with me to come in to open a Roth IRA. It's a great thing for a 25-year-old to do. And as I'm sure many of your listeners know, Roth IRAs grow tax-free. And when you're ready to retire and take that money out of the Roth, you can take it out tax-free. So you're taxed on that money when it goes in, but it continues to grow tax-free. And when you take it out, there's no taxes. That's going to be a tremendous advantage for somebody 40 or 50 years from now. Well, this young man has a good job. He's single and he has a good income, but he still has some student loan debt to pay off and some other things. So he said, I'd like to start with $50 a month. I said, that's great. That's a fantastic way to begin. I said, well, let's make a plan that every year you're going to increase that $50 a month by 5 or 10%. This year, you're putting $50 a month in. Next year, you're going to put in, let's say, $55 a month in. And every year, we're going to increase that. He said, you know, that's a great idea. And I said, yeah, it is. Because if we get an average rate of return of about 8% over the next 40 or 50 years, we calculated that he'll have about $1 million. Basically, by doing nothing except starting out at $50 a month. Now, to a lot of folks, $50 is a lot of money. I mean, it is a lot of money. If you had $50 in your wallet, you know, you feel pretty good. My belief is that just about anybody can come up with $50 a month, and especially a young person who is at a point in his or her life where their expenses are still relatively low. They can start a great habit of saving and investing. And when I say that time is a great gift, that's an understatement. it is just a fantastic gift, because compound interest is an absolute miracle. And if left to its own devices, it works.
We're talking about the state of the economy, what's going on. What I thought when I brought it up of kids staying at home was a negative. Actually, it could be a very big positive if they're wise about this gift of time and starting with modest beginnings, but with a plan to build for the future. So even though what I was thinking was, hey, this is a bad thing. Kids have to stay home. But it does provide them with an opportunity.
Absolutely.
If they'll give a little bit of thought to what's going to be in the future. And if inflation goes at 2% a year, and you're saying that we're going to average 8% over 40 years, wow, what a great increase. And to be able to take this stuff out tax-free is pretty phenomenal.
You're right, Bob. And when I talk to people and tell them, give them that type of example, $50 a month, people say, well, gee whiz, what can $50 a month do? Well, it's not magic, it's just math. And you can take a calculator, and I can show anybody what it does. The key is that you have to start, for one thing, and then you've got to be consistent and not give up when things go bad. And when I talk about things going bad, with my young client, we use an average rate of return of 8%. Well, we're not going to get 8% every year. Some years we're going to get 8%. Some years we're going to get 15%. Some years we're going to get negative something percent. It's those negative times when the stock market goes down. That's when people seem to forget about their plan. I read something this week, one of the financial advisors that I follow, and he said, a lot of people call me an investment manager. He said, I'm really more a manager of investors rather than an investment manager.
Interesting.
Very interesting. By saying that, he's saying that my job really, yes, I do manage the investments for my clients, but mainly I manage my clients to keep them from doing things they shouldn't be doing with their money. And I've told my own clients this. I will tell them my biggest job and the greatest value that I can offer to you is to keep you from making mistakes with your money. And that mainly involves sticking with your plan no matter what the stock market is doing. A classic example was in 2008 when the market went down 40-45%, the broad market. A lot of people, that was when I started my financial advising business. So I was new, and I didn't have any clients, but I could watch this from a distance, basically. A lot of people bailed out of the stock market and continued to bail and sold everything out into cash and kept doing it all the way into 2009. Well, in March of 2009, the market was at a low. Now, nobody knew that it was at its lowest, but it was. And from that point forward, it started to go back up, and now the S&P 500 is up, I think, over 200% since that time. A lot of people didn't believe it and continued to bail, and there are investors who are just now getting back into the market when it's at an all-time high, when they could have, if they just held tight. And now, I'll admit, that was a tough thing to do. I almost bailed myself. I remember standing one night, late at night, got up from bed in the middle of the night and told my wife I was afraid it was going to go to zero. Well, I knew it wasn't going to go to zero, but that's how I felt. A lot of people got out of the market, and they're getting back in now when the market's at an all-time high. That's a recipe for failure.
Interesting, the comment that you made about not managing investments but managing investors. We all need mentors. We all need tutors. We all can't be an expert in every subject. When we feel bad, we go to the doctor. He writes a prescription, we do get the test that he calls for, and we feel better. That's the way we do things. Our car's not running right, we take it to the mechanic. You know, the whole thing is we know that our health is going to come back. We feel like right. There's a better day, so we prepare for it, and same for the car. And I guess I'm thinking that we started talking about, I was hoping we would talk about the economy, but really what we're talking about is what should our attitude be and managing the excess over the grocery money and the electric bill money, what should be our attitude in looking to the future? And I think you're giving us some of that right now. This is interesting.
Well, Bob, it's interesting you mentioned that we all need mentors. You know, we just finished with the Olympics, and everybody enjoyed watching that. These athletes, every one of them has a coach. These are highly talented people, and yet, despite all of their talent, they have coaches, and they know that they could not perform at their peak. They did not have a coach helping them along and telling them what to do and how to improve. Wealthy people have known this for generations, that you don't try to manage your own wealth. You turn it over to somebody else to manage it for you. Somebody who has a different viewpoint of things, somebody who is not emotionally attached to their wealth. So they hire professionals and they hire managers to take care of their money. And that same type of care is available to the average person. You don't have to be wealthy to have a financial advisor. And a financial advisor is not necessarily going to be able to make you wealth, but a good financial advisor will help his or her clients manage their behavior. A good financial advisor will help clients set specific goals for your money. A good financial advisor will help you identify the risks that you face in life. That's probably a huge part of the work that I do with my clients. And a good financial advisor will basically separate you from your money, but in a good way, to keep you from making a big mistake. I wrote an article about that for one of my magazine articles, and I think the title was, "I Want to Separate You from Your Money." And I used the example of my granddaughter, Allison. She has a piggy bank. She's a saver. Every time she gets some money, some of it goes into her piggy bank. And she showed it to me one day, and I noticed that in order to get to the money in her piggy bank, there was a panel on the tummy of the pig, and you had to use a screwdriver to unscrew it and take that panel off so you can get to the money. And I thought to myself, that's a great way to separate Allison from her money and to keep her from spending it, because she has to work to get at it.
That's a great example.
And that's what a good financial advisor does. You separate your clients from their money so that it's there later on for the purpose that they're saving it for, whether it's retirement or a vacation home or to send the kids to college or whatever.
These are great words of wisdom for today, and in a time when people are scrambling to bring hope, to bring confidence, as the gospel of Jesus Christ brings hope and confidence in our spiritual lives, in the same way, those gifts that we've been stewards of in this life have a way to make them work to bring hope for the future. Excellent word for today, and I thank you for that. Is there anything else you'd like to add to our time today for our listeners here in Slidell?
Well, Bob, I'm glad you mentioned the spiritual aspect of what we're talking about here, because I don't think God wants any one of us to suffer, and especially doesn't want any one of us to suffer financially. It is my core belief that anyone, no matter what their financial situation is, can achieve some level of financial security. It's on a relative scale, and if you make a lot of money, you're going to probably be more financially secure than somebody who doesn't make a lot of money. But the basic tools of financial management, the basic tools of achieving financial security are available to everyone. You simply have to make the choice to take advantage of them.
Great word for today. Great word to end on. Thank you, Mike. We appreciate you being with us here today.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, SIPC. The opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual.
Thank you, Mike, for being here today, and thank you, Slidell, for tuning in to Voices here on Grace Radio. We want to hear from you. You can call us now at 985-250-1037 to leave a comment, or you can send us a text. And if you have thoughts on today's programming that would be interesting for us to hear, send us a text. We'd love to hear from you. We'd like to encourage you to like us on Facebook, Grace Radio of Slidell, and leave a comment there. We also have a website. It's www.graceradioofslidell.net, where you can click on it and make a tax-deductible donation to support this ministry. We need support from listeners like you, and we appreciate all that you've done in the past. Thank you. Again, give us a call, 985-250-1037. Well, that's it for now. Join us again for Voices of Slidell Daily at 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. and get in the flow of God's grace here in Slidell.